Good morning, everyone. It's really great to be back. I got to hang out with you all in your space a few years ago. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but I'm happy to see you all via Zoom this morning. It's nice to be able to play a video that shares a little bit of the big picture of what we're working on now with Underground Ministries and some of the other folks that can't always Zoom in. But now that we're meeting through Zoom, can I screen share and show you something really quick? Can I do that, Greg?
I think so. If you can't, I can make you a co-host and bring that on.
I can't. Yeah, if you could do that. I want to show y'all something.
Give you that permission. There you go.
All right. Take you back to 2019, before we all knew what Zoom was. Wendy McNaughton, an illustrator and artist with the New York Times, came into the Skagit County Jail with me, and she did this piece for a national audience called Captive Audiences. Check this out. Last week, visiting Skagit County Jail in Washington, I noticed a peculiar bank of semi-private screens. At the far end, a young woman sat and talked at the digital image in front of her, presumably to someone incarcerated just beyond two iron doors. The jail called it video visitation. The idea of Skype-like video chats with people in jail and prison was introduced more than a decade ago. And she goes on to describe how awkward and dehumanizing this experience is. I'll scroll down a little bit. Check this out. This might sound familiar. She wants to tell people the difficulties of remote video visit. Pixelated image. Choppy sound. Fixed camera angle. Eye contact is impossible. Must have an iPad or smartphone. And who would have thought that a year later that much of America would be experiencing the very thing that Wendy is trying to say on the New York Times is a kind of disconnecting, dehumanizing experience. And so while we've in America been adjusting and fellowships and meetings have been doing this, I like to invite people to see that we are already in greater kinship with the incarcerated than we would have thought, that this difficulty is a line of connection, empathy, and shared experience with our incarcerated brothers and sisters that we wouldn't have thought. So just to invite you into even these squares that we're looking at each other through, a year or so ago, that was only the incarcerated experiencing that, but we're all learning to adjust. So I am excited, especially during this month, February, which is Black History Month, to share with communities how really put the spotlight on what Harriet Tubman began with the Underground Railroad. Actually, shouldn't begin it, but she was one of the main conductors, and this candle is always here at my desk. Because the Underground Railroad is one of our key imaginations and inspirations for what we do at Underground Ministries, because they created networks. Of course, we know this was not a real railroad, right? But it was a beautiful metaphor. We need metaphors for a mass organizing of lines of connection, of trust, networks between ministers, businesses, churches, progressive community organizations, banded together to welcome people, oftentimes strangers, out of captivity. That's what we're doing coming out of mass incarceration today. And if you're not sold on that connection, many of you might have heard of Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow. It really kicked off the anti-mass incarceration movement about 11 years ago in 2010 when it came out. And in this book, she traces, as a civil rights attorney, she traces the connections between the end of slavery into Jim Crow laws. And as soon as Jim Crow laws were switched and ended with the civil rights movement, it only took about 5 or 6 years for lawyers in the Southern strategy to switch definitions of many small crimes into felonies, which helped people get right back to being disenfranchised and back to captivity. I'm going to screen share one more time and show you a slide we have. Can you all see this? So that's led to the United States having a really unique problem. A lot of folks might feel like, well, incarceration is normal. We've had captivity or dungeons since the beginning of time, but what we have done in America is not normal. We've got a real problem with throwing human beings away. And Michelle Alexander traces that this impulse, this American tradition, is directly connected to our history of chattel slavery and Jim Crow. Let me show you another slide. Just to look at the timing here. Whoops. War on Drugs launched 1971. That's just a few years after the Civil Rights Act was passed, right? And so you can see how quickly this ballooned and exploded as soon as the American impulse to make one huge swath of our fellow citizens less than human, and that we can have them not vote and have them be partial property. We switched into using the criminal justice system to continue this tradition. And now we have 2.4 million people on parole, disenfranchised in jail or prison. And so Michelle Alexander, in the end of her book, A New Jim Crow, she asked for a new Underground Railroad today. It was right around that time, after about 14 years for me then, by working with men and women, not just in Skagit County Jail, but then who were shipped off to prison. And I learned about reentry and started working with communities and gardens and businesses in Skagit County, welcoming people home. And through friendships with men in prison, it's a state prison system, right? So I'm in touch with more and more men writing me letters, returning to Spokane, to Tacoma, to Chehalis, to Bellingham. We couldn't serve them all. That's when we heard this statistic that there's roughly the same amount of faith communities in Washington State as there are those who are incarcerated. And so this imagination started to click for us about what if we had a much larger mass movement and we equipped faith communities to be something like a new Underground Railroad today, and to bring this back to Michelle Alexander, who, by the way, after her 9-year book tour and speaking tour, came back not to her seat in a legal department at Ohio State, but after all her learning, she said, I need to work with a seminary. And she was originally not a person of faith, but after all her work, she says, we can't legislate our way out of this. We need to get to the roots of our spiritual imaginations and traditions in America if we're ever going to undo this. We need to go way deeper in the psyche of America than just try to polish this up with some laws. Because unless our psyches, our soul, our narrative is changed in America, we're just going to get more slippery and move around the laws just as easily in the next legislative session. So that's why I would love to give you guys all a peek of what in the Christian tradition I'm really excited about. I was an overchurch kid, and so forgive me for preaching a little bit this morning. I know this is not a Christian fellowship, but it might be interesting for some of you to see in a nation that calls itself Christian, and some of you who might have been overchurched like me growing up, it might feel like good news, to do exactly that, what Michelle Alexander is talking about, is getting back to the root of some of our core spiritual narratives we have in America. And so for me, my excitement has been, as I've gone east a little bit and learning about the Eastern Orthodoxy and the roots of the early Christian movement, I found that there's a book that's been kind of paralleling my journey. Some of you might know John Dominic Crossan and his work. He's been on a similar journey with me, looking at the early icons in imagery in only the first few hundred years of the Christian movement, that understanding of a universal resurrection and the core icons, not about glorifying the cross, which is oftentimes what we do in Christian churches do in the West. We glorify an image of torture and substitutionary punishment that makes everything right. But their image all over is the resurrection. And there's always this imagery right here, all over in the Eastern early Christian movements. And I didn't know what to do with that. And a lot of folks don't even recognize that. But always throughout in the East, up to a third of the lower portion of the icon, the underground is cracked open. And this is part of the narrative of good news, of whatever this divine work is that the underground, the realm of Hades, the realm of the dead, where we push everything below. And for me, I read that psychologically as well, where we repress in the national subconscious all of our problems. And these are locks and keys down here, that these are always broken open by the resurrected Christ. And so when I've gone back to, you know, thinking about what is this movement? What is this underground railroad movement? What is the Jesus movement that I'm still trying to understand? When I go back to, there's this verse in the Gospel of Matthew 16, 18, where Jesus founds his movement. And the word for church, some of you might know, In Greek, it's ecclesia. And that's not a building. It's not a social club. It's not a temple. It's not a synagogue. Ecclesia means assembly or movement. And so I think we created a new kind of a religious structure in a temple, and we called that church. And it's just a really odd word, church. But when Jesus says his ecclesia, he says, on you rock, or Peter means rock, so he was working with people that had tough street names. On you rock, I build my movement. And the gates of Hades will not stand against it. Like, that's the founding purpose, or the why of the founding of this movement, is that first off, it's a movement, church, ecclesia, movement, and it has a direction, not heaven, but downwards. The gates of Hades cannot stand against it, as if he were founding some cosmic movement that was trying to crack open realms of captivity. It's not about even opening up the gates of heaven or opening up the gates of your church or being a welcoming community. It's much more radical than that. This movement has no gates. It's not even a welcoming movement. We don't have gates to open or welcome. We are a movement that is supposed to be defying barriers, cracking through gates and walls that hold people in captivity. And so the Underground Railroad for me is a perfect, perfect incarnation of this kind of ecclesia, this kind of a movement. And what Michelle Alexander is calling for today, for me, is larger than doctrine. It's larger than the whole mess of Western Christianity and all of its little fighting camps and idolatries. But finding a movement that is a divine descent and defying barriers between the land of the living and the realms of the dead that we create. And we sure have created a large realm of the dead and the disenfranchised and the socially dead in America through this. And so those images and that reimagining of some of our Western religious heritage is really exciting to me. And so that's a lot of what we're doing at Underground Ministries right now. If we're going to talk a little bit more after the service, I was talking with Greg and Sally. And so there's going to be an extended portion if folks are interested in learning more about the nuts and the bolts and how this program, One Parish, One Prisoner, works. But that is our invitation to you all at the Skagit Unitarian Fellowship. Is it would excite me to expand the diversity of different fellowships that we have. A lot of our communities are, you know, typical mainline congregations, Presbyterian, ELCA, Lutheran, Episcopalian. But we have this last week, I connected with a much more conservative Missouri Synod church, but they're going to work with someone who has an ICE hold, with an immigration hold. And I think what better way to transform their mind, politics, heart than to love this person with an immigration hold. And at the same time, I would love to expand our work with Unitarian fellowships as well, as you guys have been doing much of this work for decades. And I would love to pair someone coming home from a Washington State facility with Skagit Unitarian Fellowship. The language that we use also is, if this is helpful for folks, is, sorry, the old school slides, big wooden icons, is the resurrection of Lazarus. That it's not just the cosmic resurrection of the Christ figure in the Christian tradition, but we'd like to use the image of when Jesus resurrects someone else and invites a community to roll away the stone. We like to see that as a metaphor or a blueprint for what Wendell Berry calls for, which is to practice resurrection. It's not something we just sing about or argue about around Easter time, but Wendell Berry, one of my favorite poets, ends a great poem saying we need to practice resurrection. And so that's what we try to do, is have relationship like with someone like Lazarus, who's in the tombs of mass incarceration, and then invite a community to love that person and let our weeping motivate us to roll away the stones. And so the stones are the structural barriers that are heavy, just getting a driver's license, housing, job, the amount of debt that piles up, the legal financial debt that compounds at 12% interest annually while people are incarcerated. So when they get out, they can't pay that off. So they just stay in the underground and go back to dealing drugs and get locked up and go back. And so rolling away those structural barriers, rolling away the stone. And then thirdly, when Lazarus comes out, Jesus invites the community to come closer, to touch Lazarus and unbind him. He says, remove those death wrappings. And so that's our third kind of metaphor in this image of removing addiction, fear, misogyny, cultural boundaries and fears between us, but also members in the community start undoing their layers as well. Ways that we have our protective personalities, our masks, ways that we've protected our own wounds. I'll close with one story. That one community here in Skagit, they were a pretty progressive group. And so they said yes to this immediately just because they want to help interrupt mass incarceration. But one of the women who was most eager and was going to be the point person for the team inside the fellowship, she started doing a little bit of Googling, and she looked up the first and last name of the person we were pairing. And she said, "Chris, we need to talk. I want to help prisoners, but I saw that what he went away for, and he's got an extensive domestic violence record." And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, I've got some experience with that, and I might not be the right person to be on this team." And so we went out for coffee, and I just wanted to hear her experience. I didn't want to try to sell her to stay on the team. But about 15 minutes through describing growing up in a minister's home, inside the church, and the abuse she saw in the home, the abuse that she experienced, she started realizing, "I never talk about this." And I asked her, "Why not?" And I'm sure you can imagine the reasons. People don't like to talk about their pain. And that the church and religious institutions and community functions, we are great at sweeping things under the rug and not talking about our wounds. And so it really took someone coming home from prison with stated domestic violence charges on their record to get her talking about this for the first time. And then she started bringing this to the team. And then the church within months was bringing workshops to talk about safety and transparency and prevention of domestic violence within churches. And this wouldn't have happened unless they were welcoming someone coming home. And so oftentimes the wounds we repress and we lock away in prison are just shadows of our own wounds and the things that we're trying to not talk about as well. And so oftentimes the healing and the resurrection is mutual. As Father Greg Boyle of Homeboy Industries says, that we've just forgotten that we belong to one another. And so on one hand, there's the big picture of interrupting mass incarceration, and people need local support and reentry teams. And what better groups to mobilize than faith traditions that ostensibly are organized in the name of resurrection and forgiveness. But really on the deeper level, what happens is in these relationships, there's a mutuality that heals the core wound of incarceration, which is saying, "We cut you off. You don't belong to us." And when we do that, we're cutting off our own wounds and our stories. And that when we come together, these kinds of mutual transformations, mutual healings that every community needs, this is the goodness that we seek. And so we'd love to invite you all into a process of learning with us and hopefully pairing you with someone coming home to Skagit in the next year or two, if you are interested. Bless you all.